Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, Russian and Ukrainian leaders went back and forth in recent days over their willingness to sit down for peace talks. We'll take a close look at what makes countries at war agree to negotiate and when they're actually successful. First, Tom Lujak joins us now because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like the one we're about to talk about just now, peace talks, when they work, when they don't. Your support makes that happen because listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Tom, hi.
Hi, Rob. Great to be on with you today. It sounds like a really interesting program. You know, in the last hour, we also heard great programming for NPR, and we had 8 donors during that hour. We want to thank everyone who gave. The goal this hour is to get 10 gifts. Now, these goals are set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the great programs that you rely on.
Let's meet this goal. It happens one gift at a time. You can get us started right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know, federal and state tax dollars, which do come from listeners like you, provide important funding for WPR programs. However, voluntary listener contributions are actually the biggest piece of support for WPR programs.
That means that you make the difference when you give. You make the quality, the variety, the independence of programs here on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution to help pay for the programs that you listen to. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can support the programs you value and ask for your WPR stainless steel water bottle. Ask for yours with your gift of just $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, a lot of the things you pay for from day to day improve your quality of life. Maybe a good coffee, locally brewed beer, a nice cookie, dinner with friends, a fun activity with your kids.
You know, listening to WPR is just like those other things that are worth paying for. It enriches your life. It makes your day better. So support what's really important to you and give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Doesn't take a lot of work. Giving to WPR is really easy. We just need your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you want to pay for it.
You know, it takes just a few minutes to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, and those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference. So go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, our goal is to get 10 gifts by the end of this hour. You can help make WPR possible when you give. You help us hit that goal. You help keep great radio coming to you each and every day, wherever you are, when you make that gift. Right now, online at WPR.org or with a quick phone call at 888-202-2552.
And you know, Rob, as an added bonus for listeners who support our programs, their donation enters them to win $1,000 to spend on bikes or cycling gear at Wheel and Sprocket. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts, don't worry, you're automatically entered.
Hey, if you're not a sustainer yet, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up those monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. What happens then is you provide ongoing support for the programs you love, and you automatically get entered into the drawings like this one for $1,000 worth of bike stuff.
Stephanie in Marshfield says, WPR keeps me in the know as a busy mom. And Heidi down in Oak Creek says, I enjoy the topics covered on Central Time. I'm happy to donate to continue this program.
Thanks so much to both of you. I really appreciate that you listen, that you gave, and of course, the kind words. How about you? What does Wisconsin Public Radio mean to you? How important is it in your life? You appreciate us. You count on us. We count on you, too. We count on you to help pay for it all. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. early peace talks between Russia and Ukraine didn't put a stop to Russia's ongoing invasion of its neighbor, and it's not clear when the two countries will hold more negotiations. Over the weekend, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky listed actions from Russia that would make him walk away from further peace talks, and Russia dismissed an offer to attend negotiations in the city of Mariupol. That comes as the UN Secretary General visited Moscow yesterday to discuss ways to end the war. Our next guest is an expert on peace talks and says there are a lot of obstacles that warring countries face before they even open up peace negotiations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how peace talks between two countries work, the roadblocks on the way to even opening up those communications? Do you feel hopeful when you see headlines about peace talks taking place, or does it ring hollow to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Oriana Schuyler-Mastro is a center fellow at the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University, where she specializes in Chinese military and security policy. She's a non-resident senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and author of the book, very relevant, The Costs of Conversation, Obstacles to Peace Talks in Wartime. And by the way, she's coming to Wisconsin next week. She'll be in Madison on May 4th for the 2022 La Follette Forum through UW-Madison. The year's themes are American power, prosperity, and democracy. It's free to the public. I've got a link for information at wpr.org/centraltime. Oriana, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, as a layperson, Oriana, I may think, you know, if a country is involved in a war, why not sit down for peace negotiations? It doesn't really cost anything. But that's just the thing, you're right. Countries consider a lot of costs before they sit down to even start talking. What are some of those obstacles?
Well, I think first it's important to keep in mind that most people have a general idea that what happens in the battlefield can impact talks, right? So maybe you're in negotiations with the other side, and so you escalate to try to put pressure on them when you're negotiating. But what people don't realize is how you approach diplomacy can impact your war effort. And this is the primary obstacle that states face when they're trying to decide whether or not to talk. They're concerned that if they show a willingness to engage in good faith negotiations, that it will signal to all players that they don't think the war is going very well and that their capabilities are weaker than expected. You know, this is particularly problematic with Russia, that has performed worse than most analysts have predicted, and signals to their own troops that are fighting that might impact their morale if they think, oh, you know, why should I keep on fighting this war if my leaders already think it's a done deal? So there's a lot of reasons why leaders are reluctant to take those first steps to genuinely consider peace at the negotiating table.
And is there a reverse incentive to say, you know, if we have peace talks in a month instead of today, well, maybe we'll have taken or retaken key territory or won a key victory that in turn would strengthen our position at that negotiating table if we wait and go?
So part of the waiting is not necessarily that those things are independent. Like the way you put it is that maybe things get better on the battlefield, and so in a month you'd be in a better position to negotiate. What my research shows is actually delaying that negotiation could put you in that better position because it signals your resolve to prolong the conflict that could potentially get other players that would have gotten involved to say, oh, actually, you know, if I think this is going to end in 2 weeks, I'm happy to provide equipment, material to Ukraine or what have you. But if it looks like this is going on for months and months and months, then I'm out. So it actually, not only would they potentially be better off waiting, but just that signal of being willing to wait shows that they are resolved to continue fighting.
You mentioned sort of third parties there. It isn't necessarily just about the two combatant countries, in this case, Ukraine and Russia and their troops and their civilians. Who do you see each side looking over their shoulder at as they decide whether or not and then how to enter into negotiations?
Well, I think the most important outside player actually right now is China when it comes to mediation. Of course, the U.S. role in putting pressure on Russia and providing, you know, equipment to Ukraine is critical. But in terms of the negotiations, what my research has showed is that if your concern as a leader that a willingness to talk will make you look weak and have a negative impact on your actual warfighting effort, you need a sort of face-saving measure that comes from the outside. So if an outside power can either step in and provide you with a reward, a positive inducement, or step in and ensure that no one escalates in response to willingness to talk, et cetera, then those leaders are more likely to come to the table. And China, that has both a relationship with Russia and Ukraine, is in the perfect position to play that mediation role. So just like China reached out to the Soviet Union during the Korean War and said to the Soviets, can you try to get the United States and us to talk? We'll pretend that we're, you know, this wasn't our idea, just so we don't look weak in this. I think the Russians could do the same to reach out to their partner, China, and say, hey, China, can you come in and try to present this outside view of getting both sides to the negotiating table.
Is there sort of a PR incentive on the world stage to say, hey, look, I'm willing to come and negotiate and talk. I'm a reasonable party here, world, other countries. Is there any advantage gained by taking that position?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the issue is that when you're fighting a war, winning the war trumps all other consideration. So only in certain scenarios, international reputation really becomes important, especially if you're relying on outside forces and countries for wartime support. But what states tend to do in that scenario, instead of really being willing to talk, is they articulate a willingness to talk if certain maximalist conditions are met, right? Conditions that no side would actually meet, but you might say something like, okay, Ukraine, I'm willing to talk if you, you know, as a precondition to those talks, agree that Donbas is a part of Russia. So Russia could do something like that to try to demonstrate, oh, but we're willing to negotiate. But with those types of conditions in place, states actually very rarely get to the table when those are still in place. So states do that, but they do it in a bit more sneaky way than just a willingness to talk.
We're talking to Oriana Schuyler-Mastro from Stanford University right now. She's author of the book, The Costs of Conversation. We're looking at what stops countries from holding peace talks while they're at war. You can join in if you'd like. If you have questions or thoughts, maybe a historical example you'd like to bring up, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on a peaceful resolution to the Russian invasion of Ukraine and how to get there? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Oriana Schuyler-Mastro is with us, author of the book, The Costs of Conversation, Obstacles to Peace Talks During Wartime. Oriana, some of what you just laid out there, especially the fear of looking weak if you even show up at a peace negotiation while you're at war, I mean, it makes it sound like it's almost impossible to start those negotiations. How historically has that incentive been overcome?
Well, when you say it sounds almost impossible, this is why in 85% of wars over the past 25 years, no negotiations have taken place in the early stages of conflict. And in many cases, people see negotiations as a precursor to the end of the war. Now in modern times, about 80% of our wars actually end by negotiated settlement. But getting to the table is just the first step. And it's a different calculation for leaders than actually then agreeing to settle the conflict. And so we have to think about those two things differently. If we say, what do we have to give a leader to get him to the table? Then there's a secondary step of what we actually have to give to get them to conclude the war. And that's why some wars continue on for years after both sides have, at least to themselves, decided they want to stop fighting. They have a sense of where the war is going to go. You can look at this in many examples of U.S. history, whether it's the Korean War or Vietnam War. The continuation of fighting didn't get the United States to a better settlement years later than they would have had years before. It was really the obstacle of even starting those talks to begin with that prolonged those conflicts.
Do you have historical examples where the goals of the two parties in a conflict are mutually exclusive? Like, say, Russia saying this part of Ukraine is actually part of Russia or an independent republic, and Ukraine saying no, parts of Ukraine are Ukraine. Both of those things can't be true at the same time. How do you get past that?
Right. So there's a lot of research on certain goods we call in political science being indivisible. So negotiations and being able to negotiate an end to the war assumes that what you're negotiating over can be divided between two sides. Now, technically, you know, territory can all be divided. You can decide this part of territory is one country, this part is another. But in some cases, in the minds of individuals, there's this social construction that you have to have all or nothing. And this is just an additional obstacle to wars coming to an end. But it's actually very rare. There's a lot of incentives for leaders to say, it's all or nothing to demonstrate that they have the willingness to keep fighting. They have the willingness to absorb costs to get more at the negotiating table. But it's rarely the case in practice that, you know, what is up for negotiation that states are unwilling to take, you know, only part of the pie instead of all of the pie.
You mentioned the possible mediating role of China, and I know that's a focus of a lot of your work, China's strategic place in the world. From where you're sitting, what is China's interest in this conflict?
So China's main interest is, you know, it reminds me of my kids playing hide and seek, in which they think that if they cover their faces, I can't see them. That's like a large part of what China's strategy is. It's just trying to take the focus off of themselves because they largely want to be neutral and out of it as much as humanly possible. Even with the mediation efforts, it seems very risky to put their necks out on the line to try to mediate something as long as it looks like neither side is particularly interested in negotiating. So my view is if the Chinese agree to mediate, it's because the Russians have told them, okay, if you do this, we will be willing to end the war. So China's mediation in and of itself will be a very useful signal. But the point is that China, and what I'll be talking about at the forum next week is a book I'm working on right now, how China competes against the United States and how they've built so much power in the past 25 years. And one of the main things they do is they do things very differently than the United States, including avoiding any foreign military interventions, which they see as costly and not very efficient and effective at achieving your goals. So I think the bottom line is that China doesn't want countries to even think about China when we're talking about this conflict. But unfortunately, they had a few missteps. And so here we are saying, you know, what is China's role and why can't China do more to help?
Briefly, as we wrap up, Oriana, what should people be watching for if they see headlines about maybe early tentative stages of talks between Ukraine and Russia? What should we be skeptical about? What should make us hopeful?
Well, the first thing, you should be skeptical if you see some of these preconditions, the "I'm willing to talk if" type of language. This actually suggests that that country is not willing to talk at all. They're just trying to win some reputational points saying, you know, I'm willing to do this if you sacrifice everything on your part. So that should make you skeptical. I think, as I mentioned before, if the Chinese agree to mediate, it means that the Russians are on board with bringing this war to an end. That would be something that would be a very positive in that direction.
Oriana, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oriana Schuyler-Mastro is a Center Fellow at Stanford University, a Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, author of the book The Costs of Conversation about peace negotiations during wartime. Again, she'll be in Madison next Wednesday for the UW La Follette School's Forum on American Power, Prosperity, and Democracy. That's free and open to the public. You can find a link to more info at wpr.org/centraltime. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Tom Lujak joins me. Your support is an essential piece of the funding for all the programs you enjoy here on WPR. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. This drive is your time to take action. You make it all possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, we have 30 minutes left this hour, and we're looking for just six more people to join in. And thank you if you've already given. We really appreciate it.
If you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift keeps these conversations coming.
You know, in the last segment, we learned about the possible paths to negotiate an end to wars, like the one currently going on in the Ukraine. It's just one example of the quality and the depth of the interviews that you hear right here on WPR. These are the kind of conversations that you can count on from Central Time.
And it all happens because WPR is listener supported. That means your donation makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount, whatever amount works for you, and then give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's so easy to support Wisconsin Public Radio, and really the easiest way is to become a sustainer. You'll make ongoing monthly gifts from your bank account or your credit card or debit card.
Some people give 10 bucks a month, some give 15 or 20, but you get to pick the amount. Pick something that is right for you, your budget, and then become a sustainer now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Then every time you listen, you'll know, hey, I'm making that happen right now. I'm paying for this. This is my work going into this too.
You know, you can listen to WPR every day for years and you'll never get a bill. We don't count how many minutes you listen. We don't put a meter on your radio or your web stream.
We use just kind of an honor system. We count on you to voluntarily make a gift to pay for the listening you do.
And remember, you decide the amount. So important. Whether it's a dollar or two a week or a dollar a day, you decide. So go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to spend a dollar a day on things that are part of your daily routine, the coffee, the snack, whatever.
You know, consider the news, the information, the inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a dollar a day, $30 a month is just the right donation for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs that you enjoy every day.
Off to a good start toward our goal this hour. Looking for six more gifts in the next half an hour. Then we'll meet our goal. WPR is listener supported, and that's why your gift is so important right now.
Be sure to ask for a WPR thank you gift when you give $10 or $20 a month. From apparel to drinkware, let the world know WPR is your source for information and inspiration. Learn more about what's available when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Gloria in Oconomowoc gave. Gloria says, I love Central Time with Rob and all the programs on WPR. Thank you so much, Gloria. That's great to hear. Jean in Ellison Bay says, I donate because I love to listen. Well, it's just that simple. You love to listen, and Jean and Gloria both get it. They love to listen, and they know that they can help pay for it, that we need them to help pay for it. How about you? Join Gloria, join Jean right now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Up next, we'll talk to an expert on social media and free speech about Elon Musk's vision for Twitter and how changes to the platform can have real-world consequences, even if you never read a tweet. First, it's our spring member drive. Your support is the foundation of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. It's the largest piece. It's what makes the Ideas Network your go-to place for great conversations. That's why Tom Lujack is with me to encourage you to make your gift in support of the programs you count on right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Great to be with you this afternoon, Rob. Really enjoying the program. You know, when five more people join in during the next 25 minutes in our pledge drive, we'll meet our goal. Now, these hourly goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs that everybody enjoys. So make your donation right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Central Time, you get the news of the day, also lots of interesting topics, news from the world of science, psychology. We just talked about what it means to be your authentic self yesterday, for example. We'll get advice on dealing with grief later in the show as well. Central Time is your go-to place for informative and interesting afternoons.
Your financial support is a big part of what makes these hours possible. Listener support is the biggest piece of our funding here at WPR. So make a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We hear from a lot of first-time donors who are giving because they've gotten their first job out of school, or people who turn 30 and realize I'm a grown-up now. It's time to give to WPR.
Hear, hear. You know, giving money to something you believe in, a service that you rely on, that's really a great way to commemorate that next new phase of your life. We encourage it. Many first-time donors give $10 or $20 a month, but the important thing is you choose the amount that's right for you. No pressure. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Today, donate any amount and you could win $1,000 to buy a bike or accessories. What would you buy?
$1,000 would buy a lot of handlebar tape. And I need handlebar tape.
I would invest in an e-bike. It would make going up hills so much easier.
A more comfortable bike seat.
One lucky winner will receive a $1,000 gift card for Wheel and Sprocket to spend on their new bike or cycling gear. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. No contribution is necessary. Find all the details at wpr.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter, so make your gift of any amount right now. Here's how.
Make that gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Make your donation. Get entered into that drawing. It is Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Tom Lujack. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all your favorite programs going strong. Whether you give $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we really do count on your gift.
We know you love WPR because it's your source for intelligent radio, but there are costs associated with this quality. That's where you come in, and your support is so important.
And it's quick and easy to show your support. You'll be finished in very little time, just a few minutes. Your contribution in any amount, maybe $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes WPR possible.
Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part. Well, it's your continued support that keeps WPR going on day after day, year after year.
If it's been a while since you gave, it's a perfect time to re-up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'd be really glad to have you back.
You know, only 20 minutes left in this hour, and we're still looking for 5 people to join in. You make WPR possible with your gift, so go to WPR.org at 888-202-2552.
That added bonus still out there for supporting the programs you love. You could win $1,000 to spend on bikes and cycling gear at Wheel and Sprocket. No contribution necessary. See WPR.org/drawing for details. Better yet, you automatically get entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hey, good news. If you're a sustainer already, great, you're automatically entered.
But if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up your monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll provide ongoing support for the programs that you love and get automatically entered in the drawings that we have during our member drives.
Judith in Milwaukee says, I support WPR's reliability. Deborah in Madison says, WPR has well-researched, balanced news reporting. You get a lot when you give to Wisconsin Public Radio. The great conversations here on the Ideas Network, the fantastic work our news team does. Wisconsin Life, Wisconsin. So many things. The website, so much great stuff. Live streaming there, archived conversations. The WPR app, your money goes so far. You get so much. Make your contribution right now. Do it online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Billionaire Elon Musk bought Twitter this week, and that can mean some big changes to the platform. Musk has criticized some of Twitter's content restrictions and decisions to permanently ban certain users. Going forward, he says he wants to see the site embrace a less restrictive version of free speech. We're talking about how Twitter could change under its new ownership and why it matters even if you don't use the platform. David Kaye is a professor at the University of California, Irvine School of Law. He's the former United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Freedom of Opinion and Expression. He's the author of the book Speech Police, The Global Struggle to Govern the Internet. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here.
Before we dig into possible changes coming on Twitter, for someone who doesn't use Twitter, and that's a lot of people, it's nowhere near as popular as your Facebooks of the world, they might say, so what? I don't tweet. Why is this something that might affect their lives anyway?
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, Twitter is a much smaller platform, fewer users by orders of magnitude than YouTube or Facebook, but it has enormous influence. You know, it's populated, its user base is a lot of journalists and politicians, and a lot of that feeds into public media, to the media more generally, and really has a big influence on public debate in a way that oftentimes, Facebook, which is a little bit more insular, often doesn't have the same impact.
All right, so here comes Elon Musk. What has he said about Twitter in the past that might give us a sense of what kind of changes he might make?
He's been very critical of their, basically of their content moderation rules. So, I mean, to step back a little bit, mm-hmm. all of the companies have rules that determine, you know, what's legitimate online and what's not. So they have rules around things like privacy protection. So you can't, you know, publicize somebody's home address, you know, in order to harass them. Or, you know, they have rules against hate speech, against COVID disinformation, and so forth. And I think the idea that Elon Musk has had, and he's been suggesting this for some time, is that those rules are onerous on free speech. And he has a conception of free speech that suggests that, you know, the individual speaker, the person who is actually posting a tweet, who is replying, who's engaging, is really the focal point of those rules and should be more or less unconstrained in what they say.
Now, I think we've seen on the internet what happens when you have complete lack of moderation. There's spam mm-hmm. and porn and porn spam and abuse and threats and like lots of bad stuff if you have a completely unrestrained landscape, whatever your platform. Is the thought that this could go that far, like just wide open, anything goes?
Well, I think we don't know. You know, we don't know exactly what Elon Musk means when he says, you know, there shouldn't be any more censorship on the platform. I mean, I think for me, the question really is, what is free speech online? And he keeps talking about free speech with the sense of it being about, you know, the individual speaker, a kind of First Amendment mentality, which is fine for, you know, for the United States, but it doesn't really account for the way in which these rules actually try to promote speech. I know that sounds paradoxical, right? I mean, they create these rules to limit, in some respects, what people can post. But what they're really trying to do is create space so that people, for example, won't be harassed off the platform, so that those people have room to speak and won't face the kind of hate speech or misogyny or racism that might, you know, push them to another platform or push them off entirely. So the rules are really designed to expand the usability of the platform. And if Elon Musk is saying, you know, those rules are too onerous, I think we could head in the direction that you're describing.
You've talked elsewhere about one value you hope will be part of this change is transparency, how the rules work, why decisions are made. What could that look like?
Yeah, I mean, this is one area where it's possible that Musk could be a force for good, because he has talked about transparency of, he calls it algorithmic transparency, but it's really the transparency of how the company decides what you see in your newsfeed, essentially. And there's actually a lot of room for growth by Twitter, by Facebook, by YouTube, to be more transparent about the rules that they make to, you know, both to take down content, but also to promote it, because it's really quite opaque. So I think there is a possibility that Elon Musk will come in and he'll say, for example, it needs to be clearer to users exactly how this platform works. And that would be positive. That would give people insight into the platform in a way that might encourage them either to be more or less active. So there's that possibility. But, you know, there's also the possibility that, you know, he's really only talking about giving people insight into the algorithm, whatever that means. And I don't think we fully understand where he would take it in terms of transparency.
We're talking to David Kaye from the University of California Irvine School of Law, author of the book Speech Police, The Global Struggle to Govern the Internet, looking at billionaire Elon Musk's purchase of the social media platform Twitter, what it means there, what it means for the rest of us, even if we don't use Twitter. You've also said that you hope Musk thinks of Twitter not necessarily as just a public square, but in some ways as a public broadcaster. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, look, Twitter, I think your initial question highlighted this. I mean, Twitter is not the place where everybody gathers in a kind of traditional public square kind of setting. But it is a place that is, in a way, broadcasting to the public. And so, in a way, rather than thinking only about the internal rules of the platform, my point about thinking of Twitter as a public broadcaster is to think about what is its impact on public debate? What is its impact off the platform? And, you know, that's an area where there's actually room for a lot of debate about, you know, whether Twitter is really, and all of the platforms, are encouraging a kind of sharing of information that has, you know, a kind of an approach that informs the public, much as, you know, as WPR, National Public Radio, might do. Now, it can't be totally like that because it is open to everybody. It can't have the same kind of editorial function that you might have. But, you know, it has that space to develop, to be more of a part of a kind of productive public interest medium for people to learn more about what's happening in their communities, in the nation, and also especially, and this is important because I think a lot of the conversation focuses on the U.S., the global use of the platform itself.
That sounds really hard to do because a lot of people spread misinformation on purpose or accidentally. Some people very deliberately spread disinformation. But then if I'm doing that and you cut me off, block my tweets, whatever, I think, wait a minute, how come you're not letting me participate in this public forum?
That's totally true. And content moderation is hard. You know, it is really an issue of figuring out what rules matter, but also applying them in a context that varies. You know, it varies from Wisconsin to California to, you know, where elsewhere where Twitter is popular. You know, think of a place like India or Turkey. And the company needs to understand the context for all of the debates that are happening there. And that requires, you know, quite a bit of education, understanding, and so forth. And unfortunately, the platform hasn't been very good at that, sort of its global perspective, but it does highlight just how difficult the endeavor of moderating all that content will be. And it doesn't seem like Elon Musk really understands that.
Now, Twitter has a reputation among some people for being kind of a nasty place with lots of harassment going on, things like that. So some people not even worried about losing what it is right now. Is there a kernel of good in Twitter that you think is valuable to the world right now and you hope is preserved or enhanced?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that Twitter has the potential to be a really dynamic platform and a platform for, you know, all sorts of marginalized voices, for reporters, for politicians to really share information. But it does need the rules in order to make it a place that is conducive, is constructive. And, you know, it could go back to where it was 5 or 6 years ago when people saw Twitter as a cesspool of, you know, neo-Nazism and racism and Islamophobia. And the rules and the application of those rules over the last several years has tried to tamp that down and make it more usable to people. But, you know, I think the jury's out on what Elon Musk will do with the platform. But if he moves in a direction to get rid of those rules, I think it will make the platform just less usable to people in the United States and around the world.
Now, briefly, accusations of partisan bias. Conservatives say, hey, we're getting blocked more often. Some studies are saying misinformation is getting blocked and conservatives on Twitter, for whatever reason, are falling afoul of misinformation rules. What do you look at when it comes to a potential partisan leaning there?
Yeah, I mean, this is a problem in the United States, which is that these debates are so politicized. I think generally speaking, there are huge numbers of conservative voices on Twitter who have gained huge audiences on the platform. I mean, Ben Shapiro, for example, has something like 4 million followers. So I actually think that it's not a partisan issue as much as a question of whether the rules are being adhered to or violated by certain types of people. And certainly after, you know, the insurrection of January 6th and all of the concern that that online content helped fuel that. I think that that's just had a disproportionate impact on the right, but it's been based on a fair application of those rules.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That's David Kay, law professor from the University of California, Irvine, author of the book Speech Police, The Global Struggle to Govern the Internet, with us today to talk about Elon Musk purchasing Twitter, the changes that could be coming to the platform, and how that could impact you, even if you're not on Twitter and never will be. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. Tom Lujack joins me now. Listeners, that means you, provide the largest single source of funding here at WPR, and this drive is your chance to support all your favorite shows. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, just 5 minutes left in this hour, and we're looking for three more people to join in our drive. So make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
We can make that goal in the next few minutes. We can do it with your help. Wisconsin Public Radio programs really are listener powered. That means your donation right now makes a difference at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
As we just heard in the last segment, we learned about changes at Twitter with Elon Musk's plans to purchase that social media giant. These are just one of the great conversations that you can count on day after day from Rob here on Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the huge variety of topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
Hey, it's spring. Stride with pride this spring. Keep your feet warm and looking extra stylish all season long with a pair of WPR socks. Mm. That's right. You can ask for your socks with a gift of just $10 a month or more. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You needed those socks this morning. A little chilly out there, Rob.
I'm Margo Potacek, and I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
And I'm Betty Potacek from Madison.
I grew up listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, and I listen at home. It's on the radio when I wake up. I listen in the car on my way to and from work on the weekends if I'm cleaning, rarely, but I listen to it then.
I walk an hour a day, so when I'm walking, I listen to WPR on my phone. I used to listen to books. I'd download them, but I'm finding that listening to WPR, that's when I'm getting these topics that I didn't know that I was interested in.
Give now so you can hear more of the programs you love. Go to WPR.org and click donate. Thank you.
You can make that gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Tom Lujack. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for Central Time and all your other favorite Wisconsin public radio programs. That's why your support during this spring member drive is such a big deal. Maybe give $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose. That's the right amount to give.
You listen to WPR because you count on the fact-based reporting, the interesting discussions, and of course, the great music. You probably agree Wisconsin is a better place because we all have access to high-quality news and entertainment programming.
That quality is all possible thanks to donors, members of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're a listener. Now take the next step. Become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your donation of, say, $120 or spread it out, $10 a month, makes Wisconsin a place where great radio is available to everybody. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that might be a gift of $100 or even $200 a month.
Maybe that's what you pay for your cable or all those streaming apps you piled up, your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day. Put a value on it, like other things that are important to you, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're only looking for a couple more people to meet our goal in the next 3 minutes here. Remember, WPR is listener-powered. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day, and we're glad you're out there listening. You got to know, we really do count on you to help pay for it. You can make it all happen. Join the Central Time team now with your gift online at WPR.org or make a phone call, 888-202-2552. So close to our goal this hour. We can do it with your help. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 202-2552.
If you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's really, really easy to set up. You'll be making ongoing monthly donations from either your bank account or your credit card. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs that you love.
$10 a month, and you can pick up those Wisconsin Public Radio socks. I think we're going to throw two of those socks in. Not just one sock. We got a full pair with this arrangement, Tom. And, you know, socks, very useful this time of year, all the year round. And you could show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio while you're wearing them.
Gets people off on the right foot, huh?
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Well, help us get a leg up on our goal this hour. Make your gift. $10 a month or more. Ask for your very own Wisconsin Public Radio socks. People have loved these socks in the past, I got to say. I'll admit, I was kind of surprised at the popularity of the socks. They can be yours. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we are just so close to our goal right now. We could do it. Keep giving through the news. If you haven't done it already, that'll still count toward this hour. Give online at WPR.org. Or make a phone call, 888-202-2552. Really do count on your support for the radio you count on. Thank you so much.